Hello, welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, for Tuesday, September 13. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, this story by Marissa Payne is titled, Cedar Rapids Considers New Recreation Facility. Tennis shoes squeaked on the wooden floors of the Northwest Recreation Center Gymnasium as Connor Kenny and a group of boys and young men ran from one end to the other, dribbling a basketball up and down the court. Kenny, age 22, said he shoots hoops with people of all ages, from middle schoolers to fathers in their 40s, looking for a workout. On Friday afternoon, just across the hall, about 8 people gathered for senior cards. To me, this place is a big unifier for that, because it doesn't really matter how old you are, what kind of walk of life you're in right now, Kenny said. The thing that brings us together is that we all like playing basketball. We all like being here, talking to new people. This recreation center houses a number of the City of Cedar Rapids' parks and recreation programs and is essentially at capacity with the services it can offer, city officials say. And though the facility offers some activities for seniors, some say more services dedicated to older adults are needed after the loss of the Whitworth Senior Center in the 2008 flood and at a time when the nation's demographics are shifting. The number of Americans ages 65 and older will more than double in the next 40 years, reaching 80 million in 2040. To expand recreational programming and offer another space where people of all ages can gather and recreate, the city has issued a request for proposals to conduct a feasibility study of a dual-use facility serving as an intergenerational center and sports complex. This planning effort is one of several action items that arose during the city staff's process of drafting the age-friendly action plan to guide steps to help Cedar Rapids grapple with demographic shifts while making the community more livable. The City Council is slated to consider the plan at its meeting at noon today at the City Hall Council Chambers, 101 First Street Southeast. Mayor Tiffany O'Donnell said citizens have been asking for this for years, and she's thrilled Cedar Rapids is taking this step. Everybody deserves a place of their own, O'Donnell said. We also know the benefits of mixing generations, for young and old to learn from each other. This is an ideal opportunity for different generations to be exposed to one another. I think any growing and vibrant city needs a place like this for their community. As the second largest city in the state, our citizens deserve a place like this regardless of their age. For the potential new facility, Community Development Director Jennifer Pratt said staff anticipate being able to get someone under contract to conduct the feasibility study by January and completing it by June of 2023. Pratt said one of the key points of the study is to take stock of the existing private activities in the community so the city can fill gaps and not compete with existing sources or expand on successful programming. The combined sports complex would be intended to offer tournament-scale events. We have to be looking at it competitively as a community to make sure that we have the facilities we need for both practice in between as well as for those types of tournaments, Pratt said. The study will assess whether combining these uses into one facility makes sense and accomplishes the intended goals. While there may be spillover benefits to shared space, this feasibility study must ensure that goals for both the intergenerational community center and sports complex can be accomplished and that the needs and interests of the community are not compromised, according to bid documents. Other details of a potential center include location, cost, and whether it could be a new building or redeveloped existing facility are undetermined at this point, but Pratt said everything is on the table. Long-term maintenance and operations needs, such as staffing and whether a private partnership would be recommended for facility management, also will be considered. The city also is looking for the study to include an economic impact analysis, projecting things such as job creation and indirect and direct spending. That study will help us really identify the need and where to put the possible facility to program for all generations here in Cedar Rapids, so everyone has access to recreation, not just one demographic or one generation, Parks and Rec Director Hashim Taylor said. City staff are looking to expand fitness offerings for active adults, he said. There have been some steps already to expand such programming, such as the FitLot at Jones Park in partnership with AARP. Ultimately, the uses of a potential facility are something the study could help determine. Pratt said among age groups, there's a spectrum of activities that people want, from card games to fitness. We have to be listening and not just putting people into a category, but really listening to the types of activities they're interested in, Pratt said. The existing Northwest Recreation Center, 1340 11th Street Northwest, opened in August of 2016 as the first municipal building specifically built for recreation programming in Cedar Rapids. It offers programs ranging from youth and adult art classes and open gyms to belly dancing and line dancing. That facility replaced the Time Check Recreation Center, which served as a neighborhood center for the Northwest area and offered parks and recreation programs for the entire city. According to the city, admissions totaled 17,202 in the 2022 budget year that ended June 30. Numbers are still rebounding from COVID-19 disruptions. Total admissions for the past 6 years are 130,039. Kenny said he comes to play basketball during open gym hours, sometimes alone, and other times with his Aldi co-worker Seth. At just $2 for adults and $1 for kids, and with hours until 5 p.m. every day except Sunday, Kenny said it beats the YMCA's price. The only drawback, he noted, was that open gym only lasts a few hours, limiting people who work full-time jobs or every weekday. He'd like to see a facility offer longer hours, still at a low cost, but he said it still beats the alternatives for the price and convenience. I think anyone that wants to come play basketball and come play pool, come play ping pong, or just hang out, I think it's great, Kenny said. While playing a game of double pinochle as part of senior cards, recreation specialist Trish Chalupski, the senior program advisor, said the Northwest Recreation Center feels crowded at times and there's not enough storage space for all the programming there. Having another building off from the kids coming in after school stuff would be beneficial to this population. It gets kind of loud and noisy and busy, a lot of shuffling around. Sometimes parking is insufficient when a variety of programs are happening at the same time. And she said the public bus stop is too far away for some of the residents she works with, so she often picks them up and takes them to the center. Still, people come here because it's fairly centrally located and friendships blossom, Chalupski said. On Friday, the Cards group was celebrating Marilyn Davis's recent birthday. She wants to see Cedar Rapids keep up with the Joneses and offer facilities competing with Iowa City and Marion. Early efforts to make Cedar Rapids a community where people of all ages can thrive began about 10 years ago with the Blue Zones Project. The community-by-community movement focuses on permanent environmental and policy changes that will make it easier for residents to live longer, healthier lives. Creating this plan is the next step in joining the network of age-friendly states and communities, Pratt said. There are more than 650 other cities and states in the U.S. and over 1,000 communities across the globe that are part of the network. Community Service Coordinator Stephanie Schrader said the plan is framed around 8 key themes that strongly affect community livability. Housing, health and community services, outdoor spaces and buildings, social participation, transportation, respect and inclusion, communication and information, and civic participation and employment. Schrader said a common theme in feedback from the action plan is people are seeking intergenerational opportunities to connect with people of different ages. The dual-use facility could offer opportunities for all generations to work together, Assistant City Manager Angie Sharipar said. Pratt said city staff also have received feedback on the need to have quieter activities, So staff are keeping in mind ways to design a building to allow both spaces for interaction and spaces with less noise and disruption. In addition to exploring the dual-use facility, another tangible action item stemming from the plan is the creation of an art walk around downtown to allow people to connect with public art and see downtown almost through a new lens, Schrader said, alone or with someone else. Also on the front page, this story is by Gage Miskeman, Solid Waste Agency, No Landfill in Linn Future. It's official. Linn County will not have a landfill within its borders after the current one closes in Marion in 2044. That option is off the table, Cedar Rapids Linn County Solid Waste Agency Communications Director Joe Horaney said. It doesn't mean a landfill won't play a role. It just won't happen here. The agency's board made that decision because no Linn County land is available for a new landfill because of zoning restrictions. Instead, the agency and its board are looking at regional solutions in its Forward 2044 planning, according to Carmen McShane, the agency's executive director. There are real options for segregating waste streams now and working with our partners across the state, McShane said. The study and planning has been positive, and we're definitely not alone in our need for future capacity. It's been really good talking with everyone. Some of the ideas, including partnerships with other counties or even teaming up with a private company in a state such as Illinois to handle some of Linn County's waste. Linn County, for example, could ship some of its waste to a neighboring county's landfill, and in return, that county transfers some of its waste to be incinerated in Linn County. We've done a lot of outreach, Horaney said. We've spoken with Iowa County, Jones County, and Iowa City is aware of our situation as well. It's not like we're asking, hey, come take our garbage. But we're developing those potential partnerships, so there will be an answer 20 years down the road when our current location closes. The 360-acre landfill in Marion is projected to be at capacity by June 30, 2044, 22 years from now. The landfill takes in more than 600 tons of garbage and trash a day. But the increased debris that came in after the August 2020 derecho adds to the urgency. The agency asked the city of Marion in the summer of 2020 to extend the landfill's capacity through 2074. The city notified the agency in March of 2021 it would not do that. The agency also operates a yard waste site near Mount Trashmore in Cedar Rapids. The Marion landfill at the corner of Highway 13 and County Home Road has been in operation since the 70s, but the Cedar Rapids Linn County Solid Waste Agency and Marion agreed in 1994 to expand the landfill after several attempts to site a new landfill in Cedar Rapids failed. In February 2021, the Solid Waste Agency hired HDR for $445,810 through this upcoming summer to evaluate its long-term waste management options. HDR has worked with the agency before, designing the trails and overlook at the Mount Trashmore landfill after it closed. The options under consideration for handling waste include thermal, biological, chemical, and mechanical. That list will be pared down now that a landfill in Linn County is no longer on the table. Landfilling is the cheapest garbage disposal option, Horaney said. All other alternatives, including transfer stations, involve more handling. Every time garbage is handled, costs go up. With other technologies, there will be more steps once the garbage is dropped off. Those steps add costs. Even transfer stations involve moving the garbage to another larger truck for transport to a landfill somewhere else, bringing in more costs. Regardless, it's likely there is no one solution, but rather a multifaceted approach. Everything is still ongoing, Horaney said. 2044 seems far away, but it's going to be here before you know it. But knowing for sure there won't be a landfill is a big step, and we're going to keep after this process until we find out what works best for Linn County, its people, and its businesses. Also on the front page above the fold, this story is by Grace King, titled Cedar Rapids Schools to Stop Use of Seclusion. The Cedar Rapids Community School District will stop the use of seclusion in all school buildings and programs beginning October 10 as a part of a settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice. The district also will be making significant changes to limit the use of physical restraint and rethink how student behavior is analyzed and responded to, according to a news release from the district Monday. I'm proud of the hard work our staff have already done before and throughout this investigation, Superintendent Noreen Bush said in a news release Monday. CRCSD welcomes the opportunity to continue to improve our practice to support our students. Seclusion rooms are used in many Iowa school districts as a last resort if students are at risk of harming themselves or others. Cedar Rapids Elementary School students were held in seclusion rooms or physically restrained 237 times in the first month of the 2019-20 school year, the Gazette reported in 2020. This was more than 10 times a day and more than 4 times as much as in the first month of the 2015-16 school year. At the time, the district did not disclose information showing why students were secluded and restrained. The settlement agreement will address the disciplinary use of seclusion and restraint against students with disabilities, according to a news release Monday from the Department of Justice. The department's investigation found that the school district inappropriately and repeatedly secluded and restrained students with disabilities as early as kindergarten in violation of Title 11, and which prohibits discrimination based on disability of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The department concluded that instead of meeting the needs of students with disabilities that affect their behavior, the school district subdued them through unnecessary restraints and improper confinement alone in small seclusion rooms, sometimes multiple times in one day and often for excessive periods of time. As a result of these practices, some students lost hundreds of hours of instructional time. The investigation also found that the school district did not end seclusion where students showed signs of crisis or trauma, or when there was no longer any threat of harm. Students with disabilities should not be subjected to discriminatory and abusive seclusion and restraint practices that deny them equal access to education. Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division said in a news release Monday, "When schools isolate and unlawfully restrain children with disabilities, rather than provide them with supports needed for success in the classroom, they violate the promise of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Our agreement puts the Cedar Rapids Community School District on a path to significant institutional change and reform," Clark said. "We will continue working to ensure that school districts across the country are taking all steps needed to provide every student access to a safe and supportive learning environment. Each and every child deserves an equal opportunity to learn and thrive," U.S. Attorney Timothy Dew of the Northern District of Iowa said on Monday. "Our office, in partnership with the department's Civil Rights Division, will vigorously investigate allegations of discrimination on the basis of disability in all settings, including in our public schools. I'm heartened by the district's commitment to this landmark agreement, which will undoubtedly improve the education and everyday lives of many students in our community." The district will begin work to make changes to limit the use of physical restraint and rethink how district staff analyze and respond to student crisis behavior within the school setting, Bush said in an email to families on Monday. The Department of Justice has not identified in the school district any specific incident, complaint, child, or school as being the source of the ongoing review that began in October 2020, according to the district news release. The review encompassed a collection of more than 10,000 documents, numerous interviews of district and building-level administrators and staff, and site visits to several district schools. The district has worked collaboratively with the Department of Justice throughout the review, Bush said. Under the settlement agreement, the school district will implement reforms needed to ensure that its practices do not discriminate against students with disabilities. The district will, among other steps, end its use of seclusion, limit its use of restraints, revise its restraint procedures and practices, and consistently implement those procedures and practices in all schools, report all instances of restraint and evaluate if they were justified, offer counseling and other services to students who are restrained, adopt policies and procedures to assess suicide risk, prevent suicide and self-harm, and implement immediate crisis intervention for students who threaten or engage in self-harm. Designate trained staff to collect and analyze restraint data and oversee the creation of appropriate behavior intervention plans. Deliver appropriate training and resources to help schools implement the agreement, and hire 2 new administrators to oversee schools' use of restraint, if any, and ensure that the district's compliant with the agreement and Title 11 of the ADA. The investigation began in October 2020. In the fall of 2021, the Department of Justice conducted on-site visits to 10 Cedar Rapids schools as part of the ongoing review of the district's policies, procedures, and practices relating to the use of physical restraint and seclusion. The Department of Justice visited the following schools: Arthur Elementary, Grantwood Elementary, Harrison Connections, Jefferson High, Johnston Steam Academy, Pierce Elementary, Polk Alternative Education Center, Taylor Elementary, Viola Gibson Elementary, and Wilson Middle School. On the Iowa Today page, this campaign almanac article from the Gazette Lee Des Moines Bureau is titled, "Franken Ad Says Grassley Failing Family Farms." Retired U.S. Navy Admiral Mike Franken, a Democrat running for the U.S. Senate in Iowa, released a new ad on Monday accusing his opponent, Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, of failing family farms. Sporting a Navy cap in front of a cornfield, Franken says in the ad that Grassley is beholden to large agricultural corporations at the expense of small farmers. Franken, who was born in the small northwest Iowa town of Lebanon, notes in the ad he worked on a small farm growing up. "Since Chuck Grassley took office, Iowa has lost half our farms," he says in the ad. "Chuck has taken over $1 million from Big Ag, and he's passing laws to help them squeeze out the little guy." According to U.S. Department of Agriculture data, Iowa had 84,900 farms in 2021, about half the number of farms it had in 1960, during Grassley's first term in the Iowa House. It had 119,000 farms in 1980, when Grassley was first elected to the U.S. Senate. In an emailed statement, Grassley's campaign spokesperson, Michaela Sunderman, said Grassley has been endorsed by farm groups like the Iowa Farm Bureau and leaders from commodity associations, such as the Iowa Corn Growers and Iowa Soybean Associations. Is Mike Franken really suggesting he knows better than actual farmers? Mike Franken supports higher taxes and more federal regulations on farmers, Sunderman said. There's no stronger champion for Iowa ag than Chuck Grassley. Mike Franken's new ad is dishonest. Iowans will see through his attempts to mislead voters. And turning to the Insight page, this is a reprint from Saturday's New York Daily News. The guest editorial today is titled, "Ted Cruz's Poison Pill Plagues Journalism Bill." The Journalism Competition and Protection Act is designed to rebalance the terribly tilted scales in America's information system economy. It would create a 4-year safe harbor from antitrust laws for news organizations, newspapers, websites, TV, and radio stations, no matter which way they tilt politically, to come together and negotiate better terms with social media behemoths. As local journalism suffers all across America, the task is urgent, which apparently makes the legislation a perfect target for mischief courtesy of a smart-aleck senator from Texas. It's an accident of history that internet giants like Google and Facebook have been free to gobble up billions of dollars in advertising revenue using content they didn't create, leaving news organizations to fight over crumbs. The JCPA would at long last give these Davids collective bargaining power to strike a better deal with the Goliaths. In the House, the JCPA's lead sponsor is New York's Jerry Nadler. In the Senate, Minnesota's Amy Klobuchar. There's strong bipartisan support with 20 House Republicans, including Matt Gaetz and Joe Wilson, and 7 Senate Republicans, including John Thune, Lindsey Graham, Susan Collins, and Rand Paul, joining Democrats. Deepest shame on a man without any, Ted Cruz, for trying to drive a rift in the emerging consensus. In a committee markup Thursday, he inserted an amendment curbing social media platforms' ability to moderate content. It's got nothing to do with the purpose of the main bill and happens to be an assault on the freedom of expression that Cruz pretends to treasure. Under the First Amendment, the government isn't supposed to tell private companies what speech they can and can't permit. Thanks to Cruz, a good bill now looks fatally wounded. The guy's got a talent for destroying things. What has he ever created? And the guest column today by Steve Coben is titled, Independent and Swing Voters Matter. It's well known America's first president warned citizens on September 17, 1796, about the negative impact political parties could have on the country. In George Washington's farewell address, he felt politicians and their party of preference could become unprincipled. The divisiveness our political parties and their operative sons and daughters have purposely brought upon America is disheartening and shameful. With the 2022 midterm national and state elections about 8 weeks away, the negative partisanship ads have already begun. A recent Yahoo News YouGov poll noted 55% of Democrats and 53% of Republicans believe it is likely that the U.S. will cease to be a democracy in the future. An August 12 to 16 NBC News poll revealed 21% of registered voters rank threats to democracy as the most important issue. This should be a wake-up call to anyone who identifies as a proud American and values unity, individualism, equality, self-government, liberty, and diversity. The November 8 election outcome will let us know in advance of the 2024 presidential election whether we'll continue to live in a will-of-the-people democracy or if America will fall to fascism. According to Gallup, as of March, 40% of voters are independent, 30% are Democrat, and 28% say they are Republican. Dr. Rachel Bitekofer, founding editor of The Cycle and revered election forecaster and analyst, feels 6 to 7% of swing voters, that's people who vote for a candidate opposite their registered party, affect every election. Plus, she notes 6% of independents tend to vote for whoever promises a break with the status quo. Independent voters are independent for a reason. They know we have a deeply divided and antagonistic political system. According to the Pew Research Center survey, about 2/3 of independents are swing voters because both parties care more about special interests than about average Americans. Linda Killian, a senior scholar to the nonpartisan Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars, notes that about half of the independents are closet Democrats / Republicans who vote regularly with one party. The remaining 50% are truly independent. While Bitekofer, Gallup, and Pew Research Center and Killian can't agree as to the precise number of swing and independent voters, the message is the same. Somewhere between 38 million and 65 million voters are sick and tired of our political parties. Recognizing that independents detest negative campaign ads, today's negative partisanship ads by the GOP and Democrats may drive independents to be even more serious about voting. And we know a lot of card-carrying Democrats and Republicans aren't too pleased with their party, former politicians' lies and antics, and currently elected politicians' actions, let alone their non-actions. What type of citizen will you be on November 8? A sit-at-home non-participating voter? a party lemming, swing voter, or independent voter. Your heirs and our country's future are dependent upon your precious vote, whether you view voting as a fundamental right or a privilege with responsibilities. And that's Stein by Steve Corbin, who is Professor Emeritus of Marketing at the University of Northern Iowa. One letter to the community today is titled, Hinson Still Not Listening to Iowans. 5 years ago, I attended a listening session held by then-state representatives Ashley Hinson and Ken Reiser. The room was packed with constituents concerned about Republican efforts to gut bipartisan collective bargaining laws for teachers and to once again underfund education in Iowa. The pair started the meeting by implying attendees had been bussed in. We should have known then that Hinson wasn't really there to listen. Nevertheless, people soldiered on, trying to convince the pair that their assault on education would have dire consequences for the state. I remember a young teacher clearly passionate about his profession telling Hinson that many of his colleagues were considering leaving education because of lawmakers' animosity toward educators and public schools. She made a show of taking his plea seriously, but went back to Des Moines to vote the party line and begin a relentless assault on our schools. Of course, everything the teacher predicted came true. We are facing a severe teacher shortage, and Iowa has tumbled from its once lofty ranking for education. Hinson's response as a U.S. Congresswoman? Double down on the Republicans' absurd political theater by attacking some of the most vulnerable students in our schools. Hinson wasn't listening then, and she's not listening now. That letter is signed by Susan Blocker from Cedar Rapids. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, September 13, on IRIS. Turning to the obituary page, beginning with the short notices, first from Amana, Paul James Prusha, age 93, of Amana, formerly of Chelsea and Tama, died Sunday, September 11, Cruz Phillips Funeral Home, Tama, Toledo. In Iowa City, Patricia, known as Pat Johnson, age 82, died Saturday, September 10, Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. In Vinton, Sandra, known as Sandy Drew, age 79, died Saturday, September 10. Van Steenhuis Tien Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Turning now to the regular notices, first from Cedar Rapids, Betty K. Tote Venice, age 97, passed away at her home in Cedar Rapids, surrounded by loving family. A visitation will be held at Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories on Wednesday, September 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. A funeral service will begin at 6:30 with the Reverends Mark Buck and Glenn Hunt officiating. A private interment will take place at Cedar Memorial, Rest Haven. Also in Cedar Rapids, Gary Stephen Berry, age 69, passed away at his home Friday evening, September 9. A celebration of Gary's life will be at noon Saturday, September 17th at the Papage Cuba Funeral Home East, 1228 2nd Street Southeast. Visitation will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Military honors will be conducted by veterans of foreign wars post 788 following the services. Monetary donations given in Gary's memory will be to the veterans casting away disabilities, a fishing trip he dearly enjoyed. From Monticello, Carol Hansen, age 78, died Sunday, September 11, at Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids after complications of heart surgery, surrounded by her family. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 17, at St. John's Lutheran Church, rural Monticello, with interment in the Oakwood Cemetery. Friends may call from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello. By visiting GetchOnline.com, you may share your thoughts, memories, and condolences with Carol's family and sign the online guest book. In Iowa City, Wyona M. Hartwig, 95, longtime resident of Iowa City, died Friday, September 9 at the Birdhouse Hospice Home of Johnson County. Services are pending at this time through Gayanchia Funeral and Cremation Service. In Coralville, Yvonne, known as Bonnie Slatten, age 84, passed away at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics on September 8th, surrounded by her friends. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the Howard and Carolyn Jump Scholarship in Middle Tennessee State University, Friends of the Animal Center Foundation, Halston United Methodist Home for Children in Greenville, Tennessee, the University of Iowa Women's Archive at the University of Iowa Library, or the Iowa City Hospice. From Olin, James D. Miner, age 35, passed away Saturday, September 10. A visitation will be held on Friday, September 16, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Dawson Funeral Services in Olin. His funeral service will be held on Saturday, September 17 at 3 p.m. at Dawson Funeral Services. A celebration of life will follow his funeral service at Hammer's Hideaway in Olin. In Monticello, Kevin Melsha, age 60, died unexpectedly Friday, September 9, while fishing in Minnesota. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, September 16th at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello, where friends may call from 4 until 7 p.m. Thursday. Pastor Holly Knaus will officiate at the services. By visiting Getch online, you may share your thoughts, memories, and condolences with Kevin's family and sign the online guest book. In Solon, Ronald, known as Ron Hendricks, age 78, died peacefully Sunday, September 11, at home, surrounded by family. A casual gathering for family and friends will be held Thursday, September 15, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Kirkwood Room, 515 Kirkwood Avenue, Iowa City. Memorials may be directed to the Ron Hendricks Memorial Fund for his favorite charities. In Marion, Terry Lovelace, age 73, of Marion, passed away Saturday, September 10, at his home. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, September 14, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 15, at the Grace Baptist Church, 1461 East Post Road in Marion, Pastor Ballard officiating. Family will greet friends 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Burial with full military honors will follow at Oak Shade Cemetery in Marion. Terry requested contributions be sent to Grace Baptist Church in Marion, where he was a member for 63 years, to be used for needy children to attend summer camp. Please share a memory of Terry at murdochfuneralhome.com under obituaries. In Cedar Falls, B. Keith Crew passed away. He will be dearly missed, and a memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, September 15th at St. Timothy's United Methodist Church in Cedar Falls. The service will be live-streamed through a link on Keith's obituary page at dahlfuneralhome.com. That's D-A-H-L, dahlfuneral.com. Visitation will be from 3:30 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th at Dahl Van Hove Schulf Funeral Home. Flowers are welcome and memorials may be directed to the family for a future charitable donation. And our final obituary from Marengo, Karen E. Hunt, age 79, passed away Saturday, September 10, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 17, at First Presbyterian Church in Marengo, Pastor Annie Thorne officiating. For those who cannot attend, the service will be live-streamed via the First Presbyterian Church's Facebook page. Interment will be at the Oakwood Cemetery in Berlin, Wisconsin, at a later date. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, September 16th at Kloster Funeral Home, Marengo. A memorial fund has been established. Turning now to the sports page, this sideline note in college football. Kickoff times have been set for Iowa and Iowa State. The September 24 Iowa at Rutgers Big Ten opener has been assigned a 6 p.m. kickoff and will be shown on Fox Sports 1. It'll be the second straight night game for the Hawkeyes. Their home game this week against Nevada kicks off at 6:40 p.m. on Big Ten Network. The Baylor at Iowa State game, September 24, has been set for 11 a.m., and it will be shown on ESPN2 or ESPNU. In high school sports, Liberty's Brunk is on the brink. This is a high school golf story by K.J. Pilcher. Tate Brunk has probably played at least 50 rounds at Brown Deer Golf Club over the last year. The Iowa City Liberty senior converted that experience into his best round of the season on Monday. Brunk fired even par 71 to finish third at the Mississippi Valley Conference Mississippi Divisional Golf Meet. He posted the best score not from Cedar Falls, which boasted the medalist Max Choa and runner-up medalist Owen Sawyer. The Tigers won with 285, 14 strokes ahead of second-place Cedar Rapids Xavier. Brunk topped his best 18-hole round by 5 shots. "It helps on a lot of tee shots that people are in between clubs," Brunk said. "I've played out here plenty of times. I really know where to miss and where to hit certain shots to give me good shots into the green." The back nine can cause fits for golfers coming off the tee, but that's where he capitalized on his course management. Brunk tallied birdies on the par 4, 11th, and 16th holes for a 1-over 36. All six Tigers shot 78 or better. Choa blistered Brown Deer for an 8-under 63. He played a bogey-free round with 7 holes under par, carding an eagle on the par 5, 10th hole. Sawyer had to settle for second despite shooting 1-under 70. "Those guys are both D1 golfers and really good players," said Brunk, who was grouped with Sawyer. "Just getting close and knowing you can compete with these guys just helps you." The Saints have been on a steady climb this season, handing Cedar Falls its lone loss of the season last week. They broke 300 for the first time and are gearing up for postseason. Turning to the community page, the Senior Center is hosting a membership drive. This story by Isabella Zaluska. The Iowa City Johnson County Senior Center is holding a membership drive this month to invite community members to experience the various activities and programs. The membership drive is also to celebrate National Senior Center Month in September. There will be free events throughout the month. "We are encouraging people to come so you can find out what's available to you," Senior Center Coordinator Latasha Deloche said. Kristen Cromray, the center's operations assistant, said staff is looking forward to the building being vibrant and busy. The Senior Center, a division within the City of Iowa City, has been serving older adults for decades. Membership is open to all adults age 50 and above, regardless of where they live. The center offers classes, activities, and volunteer opportunities, as well as space for rent. Tours are offered. Since it is a historic building on the National Register of Historic Places. Deloche previously told the Gazette how the center keeps people learning and is a community center. While the program focuses on those who are 50 and older, the center is open to everyone. Here are the September events. The center's membership drive includes various free opportunities for community members to explore the center and try their programming. Upcoming free events include Balanced Fitness Class, 10 a.m. Friday, September 16. Fighting Against Fraud Class, 1 p.m. Monday, September 19. Family Dementia Class, 10 a.m. Tuesday, September 20. Fresh Conversations Nutrition Discussion, 3 p.m. Tuesday, September 20. Welcome to Medicare Seminar, 10 a.m. on September 24. In addition, there are weekly programs such as sports forum discussions, card games, Scrabble, and more that interested community members are encouraged to check out. A full list of programs offered throughout September and October can be found online at icgov.org/senior. There are activities offered both online and in person. We make sure that we include the voices of people who come through the doors on things that they would like to see here, Deloche said. There will be a free breakfast for all members at 9 a.m. Monday, October 3. It's an opportunity for members to see each other, meet new people, and connect with staff. There also will be an announcement made at the event. We'll be revealing something that we've been working on, so we definitely want people to come and be a part of that experience together, Deloach said. Membership for Iowa City and North Liberty residents is $40 a year. Residents who live in other areas pay $75 a year. There also are visitor memberships available at $5 per week. Deloach said she does not want cost to be a barrier for anyone wanting to be a member of the center. Reduced rates are available depending on financial situation. Membership benefits include the fitness area and billiards room, member-only programs, classes and activities, discounted parking while visiting the center, and annual events. To register as a member, visit icgov.org/senior or call 319-356-5220. In the Eastern Iowa Briefs for today from Coggin, Jim Curry performs as John Denver Sunday. Join performer Jim Curry at the Coggin Opera House, 209 East Main Street, for this tribute to the music of one of the most beloved singer-songwriters ever to grace the stage, the late John Denver. Curry's uncanny ability to mirror John's voice and clean-cut look takes you back to the time when Rocky Mountain High, Sunshine, Calypso, and Annie's Song topped the charts. Curry was the voice behind the CBS TV movie Take Me Home, The John Denver Story, in 2000. Tickets are $30 and can be purchased at the door or by reservation. Call 319-435-2071. In Hiawatha, the Beaver Park Neighborhood Association will host its second bike parade on Sunday at Beaver Park, 2700 Beaver Avenue Southeast. There will be fun for all ages at the event that run from 3 to 5 p.m. There will be boys' tacos, juggling, acoustic music, and more. The parade will be on Beaver Avenue Southeast starting at 4:30 p.m. Bring a bike. Anyone can join. And the Hiawatha Parks and Recreation will hold a 55-plus senior prom from 2 to 4 p.m. September 22nd at the Hiawatha Community Center, 101 Emmons Street. There will be music by Shima's Country Band with desserts and drinks by Quickstar. Cost is $5. Pre-register in person at Hiawatha City Hall or online at hiawatha-iowa.com/departments/parks-rec-programs, or you may call 319-393-1515, extension 220. And here are some things to do today. In the art category, attend an art reception for sculptor and painter Lonnie Eugene Stewart and word and image artists Arby Beres Moyad and Marianne Taylor. That takes place at the Kirkwood Community College, Iowa Hall today, 5 to 6 p.m. That is free. The Linn County Master Gardener, Heather Robertson, will speak about how to modify common tools so anyone who is elderly, disabled, or arthritic can continue to garden. That takes place at the Lisbon Public Library today from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., and that is free. A beginning course on learning to curl is a great opportunity, whether you're looking for a new skill or simply want to try a fun, unique activity. No experience or equipment is necessary, but registration is required. That takes place from 7 to 8:30 p.m. today at the I'm On Ice Arena, 1100 Rockford Road Southwest in Cedar Rapids. The cost for registration is $15. And in the literary category, Chew on This, Cedar Rapids author and illustrator Steve Erickson will discuss his children's book, A Very Chilling Mystery, 12:30 to 1 today at the History Center in Cedar Rapids. Cost is $5 to $7. Turning to the Business 380 page, this story by Michael Chevy-Castronova for the Gazette Ingredient wants a fair agreement, the ad says. Ingredient, in a full-page advertisement in Monday's Gazette, spoke to what it called its ongoing willingness to reach an agreement with the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union, Local 100G, which has been on strike against the multinational ingredient maker's Cedar Rapids operation since August 1. The open letter ad said the Winchester, Illinois-based manufacturer is sticking to its commitment to being a good corporate citizen in the Cedar Rapids community, has strived to be the best possible steward of this facility since acquiring it in 2015 from Penford Corp. It is with the same constructive spirit that Ingredient has approached our contract negotiations with the local BCTGM chapter that represents our employees in Cedar Rapids, the advertisement continued. From the start, our goal has been to reach an agreement that provides fair, competitive wages, comprehensive benefits, and improved working conditions. It added, it is committed to reaching a fair agreement as soon as possible. Ingredient said in its ad, it stands ready to continue talks. Local BCTGM 100G president and principal officer Mike Moore told the Gazette, the local and the corporation spoke Monday about restarting discussions and have another call scheduled for Thursday. Becca Harry, Ingredient Corporate Communications Director, when asked about the ad, responded in an email to the Gazette on Monday that we felt it was important to communicate to the Cedar Rapids community. Its most recent proposal, the corporation said in the ad, included increased pay with guaranteed annual increases of 3.5% to 7.4% for all employees, new growth opportunities for advancement and meaningful hourly wage boosts, a more comprehensive health insurance plan, increases in paid time off, and a doubling of scheduled days of work. The local union's Moore said Monday Ingredient isn't telling the full story. He said the health care plan under the corporation's last best offer could be considered comprehensive for about 80% of Cedar Rapids plant's union workers. The other 20% should be moved up to the next pay tier to full wages, but would need to wait another 4 years despite already having put in the years. In terms of health care benefits, Moore said Ingredient's latest proposal wouldn't be locked in for the life of the contract, as the union had urged. Instead, the corporation has offered seed money that would cover a few months. He also cited the locals' concern about the manufacturer's plan to eliminate 5 union laboratory positions for those who do routine testing. We're still at it, Moore said of the strike, now in its second month. The facility has 127 hourly union employees and 46 salaried non-union employees, Harry said. Closing with the weather story, losing daylight quickly is the weather story by meteorologist Hannah Messier. The sun rose at 6:45 a.m. today and will set at 7:20 p.m. for 12 hours and 35 minutes of daylight. However, we've lost 19 minutes and 20 seconds of daylight in the last week. 1 week from today, September 20, the sun will rise at 6:52 a.m. and set at 7:07 p.m. for 12 hours and 15 minutes of daylight, 19 minutes and 31 seconds less than today. We are looking for mostly sunny skies for the next few days, high in Cedar Rapids of 77 and a low of 53. The normal high today is 76 and a low of 53. The records are a record high set of 96 degrees in 1930. The record low of 35 was set in 2014. We're in the full moon phase with moon rise at 9:07 and set at 11:25. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, September 13. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening and have a great, safe day.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. What exactly is fossil water, and why have we consumed so much of it? No, it's not a new brand of bottled water imported from the days of dinosaurs. Fossil water came from melting ice sheets, ancient lake systems, and a generally wetter climate tens to hundreds of thousands of years ago. It percolated into porous rocks, which were then buried under deep layers of sediment, where it was sealed off from the surface, and there it stayed, until farmers discovered it. And in the second half of the 20th century, they started drilling wells into fossil aquifers and pumping like mad, turning sunny, dry places into acres and acres of green farmland. Crop supplies boomed, food became cheaper and more plentiful, grown in formerly parched places like California and Kansas, and shipped around the world for people like you and me to eat, ingesting fossil water with it. The trouble is, fossil water is a finite resource, and new studies suggest that many fossil aquifers may become depleted this century, so that we won't be able to rely on them any longer. This could mean that the crops that depend on them could become less plentiful and more expensive again. All the while, population will likely increase, the climate will likely warm, our demand for water will continue to climb, which means we'll have to adapt to the lack of fossil water, just as we adapted to its discovery, this time with more efficient crops and farming methods and more efficient use. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.